Gracious God, take our minds and think through them. Take our hands and work through them. Take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen. Several years ago, on a dark winter evening, in the days that are slowly gaining more light, but when darkness still holds sway, the parish where I served created time for prayers and groaning, not unlike the plea of Hannah we hear today. It was a night for women and men to lament and mourn, to grieve and pray, seeking hope. For some, it was a way to mark the loss of children, the all too often unknown death of a child through miscarriage, or the shock of a stillbirth. For others, it was a place to name the loss that they experienced through terminating a pregnancy or giving a child up for adoption. And for some, it was a place to lay down the broken heart of a failed adoption placement, or the inability to conceive. This liturgy of lament and remembrance, which comes to us from one of our book of liturgies called Rachel's Tears, Hannah's Hopes, offers a recognition of the deep pain many of us have carried in our hearts, a pain known throughout time and central to our story as the people of God. For in the Bible, we encounter story after story of families, of love and loss, of barrenness, and always, always of hope. For those of us here at St. James who have known these losses, we will have this service in early February when the days are slowly gaining more light, but darkness still holds sway. We will gather in the evening by candlelight, sharing our stories, submerging the stones of our lament into the waters of the baptismal font, and then lighting and floating candles on that same water in hope, because it has been given to us. I cannot imagine the strength of a woman like Hannah. She lived in a culture which defined her worth nearly entirely on her ability to conceive and bear children, which she was unable to do. We are told that Elkanah's other wife, Peninnah, had many children and taunted her mercilessly out of jealousy, for Elkanah still loved her. I imagine many days she must have felt like she was simply enduring and not living. It took something more than desperation to take her plea for a son to God. Yes, I imagine she was desperate after years of shame, humiliated again by Peninnah at the family feast after Elkanah sacrificed at Shiloh, a well-meaning but unhelpful husband who minimized her grief, a sense of being utterly alone in her loss. And yet she had this deep assumption that God cared for her. And from this place of knowing in her heart, her strength was finally born. So it was that she rose and presented herself before the Lord. She did not stop to talk to that priest Eli. She walked right past him into the temple and began fervently praying, laying her heart open to God. Heavy with grief and longing, her strength began to reveal itself in this vow that she made to God, "Give me a son, and I will dedicate him to your service." It was further revealed when, confronted by a dismissive Eli calling her a drunkard, she did not back down, but instead revealed her woundedness and her trust in God with the pouring out of her prayer. She left that place having told God her story, no longer sad in countenance, but strengthened by her ability to name her pain and loss, and lightened of her burden as she finally turned it over to God. We are told that God remembered Hannah, and in due time she conceived and bore a son, whom she named Samuel. As the story of Hannah and Samuel continues, we are told that upon weaning him from her breast, she fulfilled this vow she made to God and took him to that priest Eli, and she dedicated him to the service of the Lord and gave him away. Her strength was made manifest in that moment. That moment of turning over a most desired and loved baby. I can only imagine the myriad feelings coursing through her. And yet what we hear from her mouth, her song which we read back and forth to each other just a few moments ago, her song is a song of thankfulness and praise. A prophetic witness to the power of God to raise up the marginalized and to bring forth life from barren places. A song whose echo is heard in that other great song we know, the Magnificat, proclaimed by another woman touched by God's power, whose strength enabled her to say yes, the mother of another miraculous baby, Mary. Our stories draw us near, endings and beginnings flowing into one another as we approach the end of a church year and get ready to begin again with this season of expectation and hope. It's no coincidence that last week we heard the story of Ruth and Naomi. We heard about Naomi's husbands and sons dying, leaving her and her two daughters-in-law in a foreign land with no way to support themselves. She tried to send them back to their families, but her daughter-in-law Ruth loved her dearly, and where Naomi went, Ruth followed. Loving Ruth in return, Naomi worked to secure her a new husband, which led to her marriage to Boaz and her son, Obed. Obed, son of Ruth, became the father of Jesse, the father of David. Samuel, son of Hannah, anointed David king. Jesus, son of Mary, born of the line of David. These women, their stories, their pain, their songs, their strength, their faith, these were the foundation of faith that formed their sons, transforming them and the world, forming and transforming us as well. Hannah teaches us a deep form of prayer, our need to reach out to God from the deepest places in our heart. It's the lament, and it's not always easy. It took her years before she found the strength to enter such prayer. And when she did, she was accused of being drunk. But in releasing her prayer to God, she was able to walk away and into new life. Not because she was guaranteed that her prayer would be answered, but because she lived into this truth that we always have to remember: God is God, and I am not. She was able to fulfill her vow and take her beloved Samuel to Shiloh to serve the Lord, because just as she had turned over her shame and anger and pain to God, so too was she called to give to God her blessing and her joy. Ruth and Naomi taught us hesed, steadfast love and trust. In a world where they lost everything, their love for one another gave them strength. They found grace in taking care of one another, and they trusted in God to lead them forward. And Mary taught us the power of yes. Not a faith unexamined, but a willingness to step out in the expectation that God's incarnation changes everything. God is God and I am not. It is a trusting in something we perhaps aren't always sure of. It is a desire to feel the embrace of the holy when our world is falling down around us. It is a letting go of the illusion of our control, our pain, and of all the things we've been told by other people and all those things we tell ourselves. It is a yes that alters the fabric of our lives. It's reconciliation with each other, with ourselves, and with God. And when we make this space in ourselves, it's always surprising what we then have room for. Hannah let go of her anger and shame, and like the stories of so many other couples, it was only when they stopped trying that that baby appeared. And how many of us have had those rock bottom moments when we either have to laugh or cry, or maybe both? And in the absurdity of that release, a space opens up for a hope that we thought we'd never find again. When are the times that we've been so full of anger that we've been blind to the abiding love of God that surrounds us, only seeing it when we finally grow so weary of holding on to our fury that we collapse, take a deep breath, and open our eyes to the world anew? God is always waiting to meet us in a temple at Shiloh, gathered around a baptismal font, and as we float candles in memory of our suffering and loss, in the hope that trust, in the trust that hope is out there. And God is there every time that we open our hearts, whether in joy or in sorrow. This is the gift that Hannah teaches us. It's the wisdom of Ruth and Naomi. It's the boldness of Mary. My prayer is that we too find our strength and that we sing songs of trust and faith and justice and hope in our God. Amen.